Oomphs of the pod. Hey, it's Connor. Welcome to another week of drama, another incredible episode, and we are bringing you a topical star on the rise who's actually just wrapped up a week playing Fanny Bryce in Funny Girl on Broadway, which is incredible. Julie Benko, you're going to love. Also, she was in Spring Awakening, so of course we had to have her on the pod. But while I have you here, before you listen to that chat, I want to tell you about our Patreon, patreon.com/thedramapodcast, where for $5 a month, you get access to extra weekly bonus episodes between the twins. Hello, you're going to love. And also you get access to our close friends story on Instagram, aka the most coveted close friends on the theater interwebs. Come on, you know you want to be a part of it. Go and subscribe at patreon.com. Join the Patreon fam, because what is drama and Patreon if not Patreon? Enjoy this episode with Julie. Like us on every social media platform you can possibly fathom, because it's Pride Month and you need to support your queer content creators. We love you. You're going to love this. It's time for the show.
Press play. Curtain up and now we're in. It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I'm Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. Connor, how are you doing today?
I'm so good. I have the day off of work, which is random as hell. And
I know. When you told me that, I was like, is there like a bank holiday or something?
No, I mean, we get off the Friday and Monday before and after Memorial Day, Labor Day, and 4th of July, which is so chic. It's so, it's incredible. I mean, I haven't had a 4-day weekend since I was famously unemployed for a year and a half during the pandemic. So this is really fun.
Every day was a weekend.
I kind of missed that. But anyway, Dylan, I'm so excited because breaking Broadway news that won't be breaking by the time this comes out, but Into the Woods is transferring to Broadway.
I know.
Are you so excited?
I'm so excited because I didn't get to see the concert that everyone was talking about. And it's also probably my favorite Sondheim.
I know.
It's mine. It ages so well. And I mean, I feel like we've been doing this podcast for so long. We, of course, have the Ring of Keys moment. I feel like Into the Woods has been so many folks' Ring of Keys moment.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. Oh my God, it's so good. And I did get to see the City Center production, which was random and love, true luck. But
from a friend of the pod.
From a friend of the pod.
Reached out, Catherine, right?
Kind of gagged, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm really, really sad about one person who's not coming with the production, that they're not in it. But actually, I'm going to save it for later. I think you know I'm going to save it for. But anyway, it's so good. I mean, Sarah Bareilles, Dylan.
You know I love.
Broadway star. I mean, we knew from Waitress and, of course, Jesus Christ Superstar Live, but she's a Broadway star. She really is.
Talk about just like a unique voice. And I can't wait to hear her take on all of the songs. But
she makes choices.
Now, who is playing your role? Because, we did do the show in high school, Gentle Brag. You were Rapunzel's prince.
Yeah, it's going to be Joshua Henry.
Oh, wow. He was not in the City Center, right?
No, he wasn't. And I feel like, no disrespect to Brian D'Arcy James, who's going to be amazing, but I would have loved Joshua Henry as the baker.
Oh, yeah, he would have been amazing.
He would have been amazing. So good, but it's going to be great.
You could rearrange so many of those folks. Yeah. And have a different show every other week, and it would be amazing, and everyone in the different roles.
I can't wait. We need to get someone from the show on the pod. Anyway, enough pod planning, enough Into the Woods talk, because I'm also excited about something else.
Another revival we're going to discuss.
A star, someone we go way back with, because
whether they know it or not.
Well, we as guilty ones, we've had many a Spring Awakening cast member on the pod. I mean, our first episode was Chris Rodriguez.
Yeah,
we've had Lily Cooper.
Yeah,
we've Ben Moss.
You're just going to name them all, aren't you?
Andy Mientis. We really, really, really have had
Anthony Lee Medina.
Yeah, we've gone through the whole.
Well, especially the first national tour. Our totally trucked peeps were the ones that we
totally trucked. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. Well, you know what? We have much to discuss, all that and more. And I'm going to bring our guest in. So our guest today is the greatest star. She is currently the standby for the role of Fanny Bryce in the first ever revival of Funny Girl on Broadway. For her performances at the August Wilson Theater, she has been praised as a theatrical revelation, and for truly shining on stage, New York audiences have also been treated to her turns in Fiddler on the Roof, Cosette in the 25th anniversary of Les Mis, and of course, understudying Venla and Ilsa in the first national tour of Spring Awakening. That's right, she's the latest from our Guilty Ones fam to come to drama. Our guest is a recipient of the Wild Award for Best Leading Actress in a Musical for her performance as Girl in Once. She also received a Broadway World nomination for her portrayal of Louisa in The Fantastics, as well as Theater Bay Area Awards and SF Critics Circle Awards Best Featured Actress in a Musical nominations for her take on Bella in Rags. As a writer, she won an honorable mention for her first short, The Newlywed's Guide to Physical Intimacy, at New Faces, New Voices Film Festival. Her debut jazz album is available now, aptly titled Introducing Julie Benko. Please welcome to drama, Julie Benko.
Thanks. Thank you.
Hi, Julie.
Hi.
It's so nice to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here, joining the ranks of all of the Spring Awakening alums. I listened recently to John Gallagher Jr.'s episode. So,
oh my gosh, yeah, we didn't hide any fanboy. We held nothing back, and you know he was tickled by it all.
I mean, he's amazing. He's so mm-hmm. amazing. I've never actually met him, but I fangirl him. Me. You know, yeah. I feel like you.
You get it. Yeah.
Did you see him in Spring Awakening when?
Oh, I did. I did. Yeah, he was unbelievable.
Oh my
god!
Oh my
god! So good.
I want to talk to you all about your journey with Spring Awakening, which, you know, as we mentioned before we started recording, has been, what, 13 years. There's obviously more pressing mm-hmm. things to discuss. Such
as- like the Into the Woods revival, which, by the way, like I got up yesterday morning and I was like, boop, boop, boop on my Instagram. And then I saw, like, they made the announcement was out first thing. And I went, I audibly gasped. And then, cause I couldn't see the concert and I, you know, cause of our schedule. And then I clicked on it on the website and it took me to their ticket website and it said tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. And I immediately texted my husband, my sister, and my best friend. And I was like, we're going. and my best friend who was in Fiddler with me, Jenny Rose Baker, we were friends since before Fiddler got cast. So it was crazy. So we were both ready to buy tickets for all of us. Like I was on the computer, she was on the computer and the phone. Like she, you know, I had one date I can go to because of our Funny Girl schedule. Mm. This is what I learned, do it from the app, because we were on the phone, both trying to book tickets, you know, see who got in first. And I was on the queue. She had bought all our tickets on the phone before I even got into a queue on the computer.
Wow.
So use the app.
They probably prioritize the app because they really want to make sure that people are like using their service and maybe it takes a different fee or something,
or something. But yeah, I learned from that. I was like, oh wow. Okay. Use the app. And it turns out the only reason they have that random Sunday night show is that it's opening night. Oh. So I accidentally got tickets to opening night.
I love it.
That'll be amazing. Wait, who are you most excited about in this show?
Ooh, I don't know how to pick.
I know, right?
It's just such a stacked cast. I mean, I love Sarah Bareilles. I love Joshua Henry. I love Philippa Sue. Yes. You know, I mean, like there's just so many. And then of course the people who are transferring, you know, I mean, I know Sarah's transferring. I'm so excited. I'm just so excited.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm so excited too. I got us tickets as well for when Dylan's coming to visit. It's going to be great.
Do you use the computer or the app?
I use the computer. I know. It was the computer and it was actually like an hour into it. So maybe, and I was queued up though. It was maybe a 10-minute wait to get in. But then once I was in, I was in. Like, I could look at different dates. It was very strange.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, okay. All that's to say, Julie, are you well? How are you doing?
You know, I'm good. I'm, like, up and down. I'm healthy. I've got a really cool job. Like, that's all good. Some of my family have COVID right now. So I'm a little, like, worried about them and worry, you know, they seem to be doing okay, like double boosted, double vaxxed, all the stuff. But, you know, then long COVID. So, you know, worried about that. And obviously, I think it's just been a hard week, you know, given the shooting in Texas. And it's just been like a very emotionally exhausting time because you're just, it's just like, I just feel like so angry and so at the end of our rope. Like I grew up in Connecticut, you know, close-ish to Sandy Hook. Oh, and wow. Like my uncle is a rabbi and he was like the Jewish chaplain on site at Sandy Hook. And I know people who lost children and or lost, you know, lost family members in that shooting. So it's just, it's like the fact that we're a decade later and like, so I have no words. So not to bring it down, you know, but it's just so upsetting to like live in this country.
I know. Where,
and to feel like we're held hostage by this very small minority of people who have a hold, like this hold on this huge national party, you know, that yeah. It's just, it's really frustrating. So I'm well in some ways and I'm still really upset, you know.
I know. I feel the same way. It's mm-hmm. It's an absolute tragedy. It's devastating. And one part of it that I'm still trying to grapple with is how we're supposed to just go about our normal jobs and lives and we're supposed to just not be distracted and not be thinking about it and not be grieving and feeling mm-hmm. empowered to go and make change. When I found out people were at work, we were in the middle of our work day and everyone's just like, oh my God, back to their computer.
Right. Another one.
Yeah. Another
one.
You
know, we've so desensitized to it and it's like, it just doesn't have to be this way. It's just,
right.
Just doesn't have to be this way. And
like, what do we have to do? Like everyone just like strike, like we all just leave everywhere. And you know, it's like, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
I'll do whatever. I'll do it, you know?
Right. And you know, I think somebody tweeted to me, you know, cause I think I tweeted something about it and somebody said, when we are all complicit because we have to realize that electoral politics are not going to change things. But then I'm like, well, then what are we supposed to do? You know, that's the method,
right?
That's the, in a democracy, you know, that's the method is our electoral politics. So what are we supposed to do? And how, you know, I guess we're all complicit because we don't all do enough, mm-hmm. you know, but you know, to say that false equivalency there that you're like, but there are certain people who are actively working right. to prevent basic regulations from to get like to keep 18-year-olds from purchasing, you know, weapons of war.
Right. No, it's important that we're talking about it too, because it's what when will it stop? People always just say, oh, just vote. We have to vote. And it's like, yes, we do. But like, it's a long time until November. And this has happened how many times in the last 2 weeks have we had shootings? So it's.
I know. I gave money to Beto yesterday. I was like,
yeah,
I mean, it just feels like something to do, you know,
mm-hmm. We're living in a crazy time too. And has COVID greatly affected the company of Funny Girl at all?
We have so far, knock on wood, because things have been rapidly moving around the city lately, but so far we've been mostly okay.
Okay.
We have an incredible testing system in place that I don't think other producers don't necessarily pay for. Like we have a very fancy, expensive system in place, but we PCR test via saliva, which is even more sensitive than the nasal PCRs every day we're at the theater. So I'm PCR testing 6 days a week. And these PCRs and everybody who steps backstage does this. Wow. So it's not just the actors, it's every crew member, every musician, you know, anybody who happens to work on, you know, any creative team member who comes back for a day, if they want to come backstage, they have to PCR. And the salivas, I guess, are supposedly so sensitive that they can catch it. They catch it like a day before you are infectious. So wow. The few people that we've gotten, they get removed out of the community backstage before they manage to spread it. Because also, except unless you're an actor on stage, you are wearing your mask. The worst mask you're allowed to wear is KF94. Like you have to wear that or above. Wow. KN95, N95. So unless you're an actor on stage or a wind musician playing your trumpet, you know, you have to wear the mask. And so it really keeps it from spreading. Like the system really, really works. And so I think I can say this, that Ramin obviously was out for 10 days. That was in the press.
Yeah. But, he posted about it too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, that's not HIPAA. We're not, you know, supposed to, but I think he said it. But we've been so far pretty okay. And I know other shows have been calling in people and they're on book and they're in masks and they're canceling, and we haven't had to do that. And I think it's because of this phenomenal system that the producers have been very, I mean, it's, I would say generous, but it protects their investment too,
right,
of the show. I mean, we don't have to shut down.
Right. So. And I mean, this show is so in demand. I mean, when it was announced that Funny Girl was coming back, much like the Into the Woods announcement, I feel like there were pre-sales. Everyone was excited. It was like the biggest news ever. Were you announced as the standby for Fanny immediately?
They announced that Beanie was cast, and I saw that press release and I sent it to my agent and I said, I would like to be her standby.
You're kidding.
No. I was like, I think this is great casting, and I would like, I gosh, in a dream world, I'd like to be her standby. And they were like, okay. And then I think more casting came out. Ramin was announced. Jane was announced. Jared was announced. And I didn't get an audition. I think they were seeing a number of people, and I didn't get in the door until November of 2021. Like, it was later in the game, I think. And I made a tape and I was like, they're never going to cast me, you know, like little old me, you know? And then I got a call back, and then I was like, they're never going to cast me. And I think that attitude actually helped me be relaxed in my audition. And then I got it. And I still like, was like, my agent called and I was like, are you sure? Are you positive? Like, I just kept being like, I'm going to show up and they're going to be like, no, we thought we meant to offer it to somebody else.
So was this like a dream role?
You know, I have a weird relationship with this, which is that it should have been, but I never saw Funny Girl growing up. I don't know how a Jewish musical theater girl from, you know, like doesn't see Funny Girl, but it just wasn't in our house. I was obsessed with like Meet Me in St. Louis and Sound of Music and Grease and Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, which has not aged well.
No.
And also like Grease too. Like, there were other ones that were in my life, and Funny Girl just never made it into my DVD player. I don't know how. And so I didn't know it. And in grad school, which I did, I went back and did my master's, and I graduated in spring of 2021. So it was like a year ago.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly.
Congrats.
And thank you. Yeah. And I was in, it's an acting program, but they have a singing class, and there are a lot of actors who have not ever sung before. And like some people who are like, they're tone deaf or whatever. And it was my favorite class, not because I loved, I mean, I obviously love to use the time to sing, but I just think, I mean, hearing people who didn't believe in themselves or felt shy about their voice. I mean, I just think something about your singing voice, it's so vulnerable. And so to watch people, I had like this master teacher, Deb Lapidus, who teaches both at the NYU grad and the Juilliard program. She's like their singing teacher. And I think she's just a master at really making people understand that singing is just an extension of storytelling. And it's just opening up your soul and your heart in a different way to the room. And so watching people find their voices, like, it was the most moving, poignant experience. I mean, I cried at like every class, you know, because I was just like, it's so beautiful to watch people connect with these parts of themselves. But I was looking for a song to work on. I was like, I don't know what to work on. And this girl who was a year ahead of me, she said, yeah, have you ever heard of The Greatest Star? And I was like, no, I don't know it. And she was like, I feel like it'd be good for you. And it's like, okay. So I learned it for class and I worked on it in class.
It's a doozy.
I know, it's a doozy. And I was like, I love this song. And so then I started learning. I like had a concert, you know, and I was like, and I had done once in, I've done once a few places, but I did once at the Hangar Theater. Oh. And
is that in Ithaca?
I did that in Ithaca. Yeah. And that was the right after I graduated. It was crazy. I graduated and then I got married like a couple weeks later. And then I went a week after that and did once. And when I did once, we were outdoors because it was a pandemic and we got rained out of half of our performances. So yes. When they invited me back to sing in their fundraising concert, we put together this set and we were like, I was like, maybe I should do a song about like rain. And so I was like, I should learn Don't Rain on My Parade. So I learned Don't Rain on My Parade. I sang it there. And then my audition came in for Funny Girl like a month after that. So I knew some of the songs. I learned people, you know, but like I for that audition and loved it, but I didn't really know it. So like, I always knew that like, oh, Fanny Brice is a role that people have maybe mentioned to me, but sure. I didn't know it that well. And I think ultimately that's been a blessing, because I think if I had grown up, you know, watching Barbara do it and listening to Barbara do it, all that, that would just be impossible. You just can't, I mean, how do you compare with like that complete perfection? Right. So it's like, I just think it was so then once I got a call back, I watched the movie with Barbara and I just to get a sense of the show better. And she was amazing, but I was like, okay, I'm going to watch it once and then never, and then not until this whole thing is over, because I just didn't want to be completely, you know, trying to imitate her or something, you know?
Right. Yeah, that makes total sense.
This was sort of a long-winded,
answer. Not long-winded at all. Cause it's such an interesting journey that, I mean, I feel like when, you know, especially when the news that Beanie Feldstein was going to be leading this production, people were just so excited that a Jewish mm-hmm. woman was going to be leading this production. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to hear that you as a Jewish woman, it didn't necessarily, wasn't like the thing that you were raised on. And so I love that that kind of worked to your advantage.
I know Beanie's been like singing Don't Rain on My Parade since she was 3 years old or 2 years old. And I literally like learned it like... last year, like, and we completely different experiences,
of course,
coming to the same show and same role, you know.
So did they give you literally like a binder of things to know for the callbacks?
You know, I was surprised at how I didn't have to do that much.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, I did for the callback, I did like two scenes and two songs, which honestly I've done more than that for a first audition sometimes, you know, so. I was surprised. I was like, don't they need to see more to know that they want me?
Right.
But I think I've heard other people say sometimes that the mark of a sort of a mature director and a mature team is like somebody who they don't feel insecure enough in their decision-making process that they need to see you do the whole play. Like they can tell from their feeling from 5 or 10 minutes that this is a fit or not a fit, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that kind of gave me a chill that then they just had that feeling about you. That's so special.
You were born to be Fanny.
I did like in the audition, in the callback, like the music director was like, do you know the music that makes me dance? And like, as I've mentioned, like, no, I don't know Fanny. And music that makes me dance wasn't even in the movie. So I really was like, no. And so he was like, come over to the piano. And so he started teaching me the end of Music That Makes Me Dance. And I had to like cold sing it right there in front of everybody, like learning it, reading it off the page. And I was like, and he was like, great, thank you. And I was like, I came out and there was another woman, you know, sitting outside. And she was like, did I miss something from the audition packet? No.
So awkward.
I know.
It's interesting to hear your relationship to Funny Girl too, because I feel like that's been a lot of the conversation this season, at least amongst people around our age, is what was our relationship to Funny Girl? Because it hasn't been done on Broadway until now, since, you know what I mean, since originally. Yeah. And then the film. Well, so when we went to go see the show, actually the first performance after you guys opened, which was so mm-hmm. fun to be at, and then right before Ramin was out for a little bit, so we were like, oh my god, there's so much happening on Broadway right now. But it was our first experience with the show, and I think that's been such a cool conversation piece with people who are going to see it, is a new generation is experiencing Funny Girl. Truthfully, my exposure to the material, for better or worse, embarrassing or not, was through Leah Michele's performances on Glee, which I'm sure
I think a lot of
you
people
hear a lot, right?
I think a lot of people, yeah.
And I guess I'm curious, and I know you're online, and the Leah Michele's relationship to Funny Girl conversation is ever present because she did it on Glee and Ryan Murphy had the rights and people were like, she's going to do it on Broadway. Do you guys talk about that as a cast? Like the rumors that she's coming in at some point to do it? Is that like a thing you guys talk about?
I mean, I think we're just like consumers like anybody. Yeah. So we're like, hey, like I read this crazy thing, but you know, it's like, I think it's one of those things where you go, you know, you can't believe everything. Because mm-hmm. you know, we just go like, you see that rumor, you know? I mean, I've read some interesting rumors about myself lately. Or like, not even read, or you know, I had some people coming up to me. They're like, actually, Deb Lapid is the one who was my teacher working on Greatest Star with me. She was like, there's this rumor that you and Lainey Kazan and Shirley MacLaine like all had a Zoom together. Is that true? I was like,
drama.
So were you technically like, the Lainey of this production? Because was Lainey supposed to come in and replace Barbara?
Lainey was Barbara's standby. That's what it was, okay. And so she And she, I think, went on for one day. It was like one two mm-hmm. show day, and then she was gone. So
Barbara didn't want any more of that, from what I heard.
This I don't know. You can't. Allegedly. But that's the thing. Allegedly, I had a Zoom with Lainey and Shirley MacLaine. So allegedly is like really, really, you know.
Yeah.
I have never heard that before. I must have like a huge blind spot for like funny girl stuff, but that's funny.
About what I said, Connor?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, wait. So your first time going on, though, there were scheduled dates, and it was shortly after opening.
Yeah, it was. We opened on Sunday, and then I was on Friday.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was on for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And, you know, I'd known for months that I had these days coming, and my stomach was just, like, completely in knots, you know, because also you don't get a lot of time to rehearse, you know, opening and all the preview process and all that stuff. You know, there's no time to think about the covers and, right. you know, you don't get a lot of time. Sure. And there were a couple days of like where in previews, they said, you know, oh, we're just adjusting some lighting cues. And so, you know, we don't really need Beanie to come in. So Julie, can you stand on that ladder while we fix the light? Mm-hmm. So I'd had a couple of chances to be on the set and, you know, not in costume or anything, but to at least be on the set under some lights to start getting comfortable on the space. It was not a lot, you know, sure. and I had maybe 2 days of understudy rehearsal with the other covers on the set. And then, you know, the day that was supposed to be I was supposed to have my put in on Thursday, and then I was going to go on Friday. But then I woke up Thursday morning to a text from my stage manager saying, can you call me when you get up? And, you know, it was Ramin had tested positive. Right. And so that put in became for his standby, Jeremiah James. And so then they said, well, Beanie's going to be in with Jeremiah tonight. And so then tomorrow you'll be in. So we're going to have you do your put in tomorrow. So I ended up doing my put in on Friday. I did the show Friday night. I did 2 shows Saturday. I did 1 show Sunday. And let me tell you, I was like, I don't think I've ever been more stressed in my whole life. I mean, my whole life, I think it was a special, unique kind of stress that I hope I never experience again. Yes. because there's a certain level of stress that I think comes with playing the role and the pressure of feeling like you're carrying the show, which honestly, Beanie is such a rock star to have to deal with that all of the time. But I think the added stress of knowing I had never done it with the people that I was going to be doing it with, or have any of the rehearsal, the benefit of like having it in my body, you know, having the stamina from having done it, all of that stuff. There was just going to be so much new sensory information coming at me at once.
Yeah.
And then the fear of COVID was so high. Like I was convinced that I was going to get COVID and that I was going to miss the weekend, you know? And so I was like, I stopped. I didn't see anybody. I was like, I was, you know, really being super, super careful, even, you know, among our incredibly highly tested.
Right.
I wouldn't take my mask off to eat at the theater. Like I was just being really, really, I was like, what if I get COVID? Oh right. My God, you know, this might be my only time I get to play Fanny Bryce on Broadway. and so as soon as it was over, it actually took me like a week to feel like I could return to normal. Like the stress hormones going through my body. Like I couldn't eat. Really, I wasn't sleeping. Like I had like adrenaline overdose. Like I was up at 6 a.m. like for the whole week. Oh. Like I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. I can't believe that happened.
And what relief, I'm sure too, that you felt like, cause I mean, the word on the street immediately after your first performance, like we said earlier, I mean, we weren't lying when we said that people were saying that you were a revelation and a shining star. Like everyone was gagging for you, Julie.
Oh,
like
it
is an event to see. We get to see two different types of Fanny Bryces on Broadway. If people are lucky enough to see you or lucky enough to see Beanie, we're blessed right now as theater fans, you know, so congrats to you. And
thanks.
And I hope that I get the chance to see you. I wish I would have known you were going on that first weekend because, you know, as a guilty one, we run deep.
So well, there are some dates scheduled for the end of August. So you will have a chance as long as, you know, knock on wood, COVID and all of the rest, you know. And all the rest.
Well, congrats. I'm so excited for you. And Hope I get the chance to see you.
Oh,
now we
thanks.
Do, we, you know, you mentioned that you watched not necessarily Funny Girl, but some other movie musicals growing up. We do like to go back to your early days of kind of when you got bitten by the bug. We call it your Ring of Keys moment. Do you feel as though this might've been a movie, might've been a performance, it could have been anything. Do you feel as though you had a Ring of Keys moment early on in your career or life?
I always loved going to shows and I always loved being in, you know, drama club and stuff. And, but, you know, I thought I was a good singer and my parents were like, you're not, you know, I was like, Mom, can I get voice lessons? They were like, why would you want voice lessons? Like Sarah, who lives three doors down, can sing, not you. Like it was, then I did the summer before my freshman year of high school. I did, there was like a youth Les Mis, you know, student Les Mis student edition that they did at this local community teen theater where, you know, there was no cost to it being, you just sold, like you did a pie sale. You were supposed to sell $300 worth of pies to be in it or something.
Oh, interesting. And,
you know, and that was my first time like in a full length show, you know, that wasn't like drama club in middle school. And I had the best time. I was in the ensemble. I was like turning woman number two or something. You know, I think I was milking a cow. And I just had such a great time. And then that was sort of the start of it. But then the end of that summer, I went to see a local community theater production at the JCC of The Secret Garden. And in the program was a slip, like auditions for Fiddler on the Roof coming this fall. And so I was like, I want to audition for Fiddler. And this is sort of legendary in my family, this moment, because, you know, I said to my dad, you know, can you drive me to the audition? And he was like, okay. And then my sister was like, I want to come. She's my younger sister's, she's 4 years younger. So she was like 10 and she said, I want to come. And then my mom was like, well, you know, I'm not sitting here all alone. So she came. And then I did the audition and the director, her name's Toby Silver. We're still close. And she saw me audition. Then she sees my dad and she was like, sir, can you audition? Like we're desperately in need of papas. My dad said, I don't do this. Like I'm in business. You know, and she was like, please, you can sing Happy Birthday, please. And he said, fine. And then they saw my little sister and they said, you know, we need some little girls because the audition had said, oh, 12 and up or something. Mm. So she didn't think she was allowed to audition, but they said, no, we actually need some little girls. And so all of us ended up cast in the show.
What about your mom?
And she was like, again, she was like, I'm not sitting home alone. So my mom played a villager. She was like selling bagels or something. And my sister was Bielka and I was Huddle. Yeah. And my dad was Red Morka, the innkeeper. And my uncle, by the way, was like the cultural consultant. Like, you know, he like helped set the wedding properly and all this stuff. And, you know, it was like this amazing community theater production, really amazing. And that was the turning point for me where I got the bug. I fell in love with it in a way that, you know, it's been a lifelong love affair, right? And that woman, Toby, who was the director, she became my acting teacher. Uh-huh. I went to take lessons with her every week and she ran this summer arts program that I went to as a camper in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And then I worked for her as a counselor once I graduated from high school and she was a major mentor and she sat my parents down like that year of Fiddler. And she basically said, I think that, you know, Julie has something that she could actually pursue this. And I had never thought of doing that before. And, so that, and then she encouraged me to, you know, apply for college and she helped me with my college audition monologues and all that stuff. So she really got it going, but that was the moment. And I have to say that was the moment for a lot of us in our family. My dad is the president and treasurer of the local community theater in our hometown. Oh. And he continues to play Scrooge every winter. Every Christmas he's Ebenezer Scrooge and he's played all these roles. He's like famous in our area for playing all these roles. And my sister became a director and now a writer, like a playwright. And we weren't like, I mean, we always liked seeing shows, but we weren't a theater family. We became a theater family from that. And I never looked back. So Fiddler on the Roof was really, it changed all our lives. And so then to be in it on Broadway was like this huge full circle moment. And then my grandma, you know, saw me play Hava in that. And, you know, it was just, that was this huge full circle moment.
Oh my God. That's an incredible story.
I can't believe I didn't know that story too. Like, that is so special. And we saw you cover Samantha Macelle when you went on. Is that Huddle or Hava?
Yep, Huddle.
So how fun that we saw you as Huddle, the same role.
Oh my God, the same role that that began it all. And
your rendition of Far From the Home I Love was just chilling and beautiful. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah, that revival was that revival. Magical.
I know. Bart Shear is a genius. Danny Burstein is a genius and the nicest, kindest man alive. And Jessica Hecht is like just the most amazing human. And I'm still close with a lot of people from that show, you know, including Al Silber. Yes. And, you know, it was very much a shtetl. You know, it continues to be, I think, that community. Not every show sort of sticks together after, you know, people go their separate ways. They have lots of going on in their career. Mm-hmm. But Fiddler, it is very much like that community is still there. I saw Carl Kensler, who played the constable in that, like he wrote a play and I was at his reading of his new play on Monday with Jenny Baker, who was Sprinza. Like we're all still friends, you know?
That's really beautiful.
That's so special. Yeah. I love to hear that because ultimately a cast can be like a second family.
Yeah.
Now, before this full circle moment happened, we obviously mentioned that you did Spring Awakening on the road. Where in your journey did this sort of happen? And what was your experience with Spring Awakening before you joined the first national tour?
Oh my God. So Spring Awakening, I saw it when I was like 17, I think it came out and I maybe got tickets for my birthday to go and just thought it was so amazing. And I had gotten an agent when I was around 18, like actually that Toby lady, she knew somebody in the city who knew somebody. And, you know, I ended up with an agent and when I met her, I was 18 and I sang, I could have danced all night in her office. And she was like, she cried. And then she goes, you need to be in Spring Awakening. And so I got an audition for it. Literally, I think I went in for that show like 8 times, like for the Broadway and the tour. I had a final callback to go in. I think it was it Aaron Merman who booked that part? It was like to replace Anna.
On Broadway?
Yeah, it was like to replace Anna for something, like for a stretch of time and then become a swing. It was like a final callback on the day that I moved into college. So my parents, like we packed up the car, they drove the car to my dorm and I went to my audition and then I met them at the dorm and we were unpacking the car and I was checking my phone. And if I booked that, we were just going to pack the car back up again and find somewhere else to live.
So like slowly undoing the,
but like, I didn't get it. And then I went in over that freshman year of college. I went in a number more times and I didn't get it. And then the last day I was on my way to turn in my last paper to put it in my professor's mailbox and my phone rang. And it was like, you're going to go on the tour with Spring Awakening, which by the way, that one of my auditions for that, we literally were standing on the stage of the Eugene O'Neill and they had us come out in like little groups and we would watch 2 or 3 other people in our group perform. I was in a group with Krista Pioppi and I also, Caitlin Kinnunen was there. Like we switched times because of something, I forget why, but they like handed us a microphone and we went out and sang like My Junk and Whispering and all the, you know, these songs. And I literally, like, I remember they handed me like Jonathan Groff's microphone to go out and sing. And I was like, what is happening right now? You know,
that
what
doesn't
is happening
happen anymore. They
no.
don't really do that. Yeah.
That's the only time that's ever happened to me where I did an audition on stage. And so I mean, that was wild. And then, you know, then I didn't get it. And then to finally get it was just, I think I was standing in the street and I just broke down hysterically crying. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I'm going to really be an actor. And I just was so excited. And what's cool now, you know, Michael Mayer directed that production and on opening night, you know, he wrote me this card and he just said, I feel like Mr. Keeney in Funny Girl, because it was like, I knew you when you were just some kid at Keeney's and now you're like, you know, a diva, you know, it was like, it was so sweet, like to feel like that he's so cool that he's been like a champion of mine now for a long time. I mean, it's, you don't know, you know, you don't know which people you're going to end up working with again or not, and when the right thing that they're working on calls for you, you know, it's like,
yeah.
Project is so unique and calls for certain talent, certain people, certain energies, you know.
You've had such cool experiences. I love the symbolic nature of you moving into college and having this, you know, audition, and then you're turning in your final paper for your end of your first year. And then, so you finish your first year of college and then you go out on the road, which I'm sure was like a first year of college experience on its own, being in this, you know, high profile show that's all young people.
Totally trucked, you know, it was like, and it was before the internet. I mean, not before the internet, but it was before, I mean, Facebook wasn't that big yet. Like it was, you know, the fact that the Guilty Ones had the message board. I mean, now we live in a completely different world, but like Twitter wasn't around, you know, it wasn't.
No Instagram.
Yeah. Or maybe Twitter was just around, but it was,
I think it just started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was very different world to be in even at that time. Right. As everything was changing, you know, digitally. But yeah, that was, I mean, we were all like 18, 19, 20. Yeah. We're just like a bunch of unsupervised teenagers.
Who was like your squad? Like who would you hang out with the most of that bunch?
My best friend in that show was Jake Epstein. And we're still close buds. And I mean, he lives in Canada, so I don't get to see him very much. But yeah, he's still a good friend.
Of Degrassi fame, yeah. Of course.
Of course, yes.
And then Beautiful, the Carole King musical.
Yes, Jake and I were roommates when he booked that musical. So I played Carole King in our living room a lot.
I would pay to see it. I would pay to see it, honestly. That's amazing. Wow.
I love
Julie, Julie, you are so eloquent in the way that you tell these stories. It's amazing. And you know what I can also tell is that we're sort of at a new precipice in your career. And so I feel like there's so much ahead for you as well. So congrats to you on everything so far.
Thank you. I mean, who knows? Who knows? Mm-hmm. The world keeps surprising us every day. So
very true. Very true.
Yeah. True words never spoken. I mean, it's drama. And you know, speaking of drama, we do like to end our chats on a dose of drama. It's like a little pop culture recommendation or something you want to share with the listeners. You could rant about something, rave about something, anything you want to promote. Anything that's on your mind. And I mentioned earlier that there is something on my mind, so I'm going to kick it off today. And you know, Into the Woods is transferring to Broadway, and Patina Miller is gonna be playing the witch, and I think she's going to slay. I'm so sad that we don't have some sort of cast recording or some official version of Heather Headley's version of the witch, because y'all, her interpretation of the role, both acting and singing, was singular. I was hearing these songs that I've heard hundreds of times in a new way, and it was so special. And maybe it was one of those lightning in a bottle history making turns that we get to see, but I'm feeling dramatic about it because I know she can't do it, probably because of her Netflix show that got picked up for new season, or I don't know, you never know. I'm sure she stays booked, but I know she does. Yeah. She was so good, and I'm sad that not everyone will get to see it this summer.
I'm sad I don't get to see it, but I'm sure Patina will be great. But man, I mean, I saw a tiny clip of her doing, I think, was it with it was with Shireen. I think it was a clip of Stay With Me. And I need more. I just need more. Another side note, I played the witch in high school.
We got our little production right here. Oh my God.
I think there's a video somewhere, you know.
You still know the rap?
Oh, beans, parsley, pepper ridge, but no, I guess I don't is the answer.
It's a tricky one.
It is tricky. When Heather was doing it, I thought she messed up at one point, but I was like, no, I think I was just singing it wrong all these years. Like, she definitely nailed the lyrics. Oh my God. Dylan, do you have a dose of drama?
Rutabaga. It's coming back to me.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Raiding my arugula. Yeah.
Tonight, like before the show. Are you going on tonight or is it?
No.
No, okay. Okay.
Not as far as I know. Let me check my texts. No.
Okay. So do you live in constant anticipation of like getting an email that says, Julie, call me?
Yeah.
I mean, as an anxious person, that would actually maybe be the worst job in the world. Like, you're like, oh, cool. Like, I get to, you know, I'm I imagine you get paid for being there, but you get paid and you get to to have your free days. You don't, you know, every day isn't as stressful, but the stress of like maybe would kill me.
And it's like, I feel like I have to act as though I'm going on, but then I'm not. So I think I just am used to now being in this sort of flow of like, treat your body like it's in performance mode, so that when performance mode does happen, I do get like, when that happens, I do start to get like some nerves, they happen and my stomach gets weird and like, you know, all that stuff. But I think the more that I do that, it like helps maintain just some of the stress of like, oh my God, what if I get a call, you know, because it happens. Like it happened last weekend, you know? And so,
So speaking of that, I know you mentioned that your drama might have to do with some upcoming dates. Do you have a dose of drama for us today?
Oh yes. Yeah. So my dose of drama is my next dates to go on for Fanny they're public. It's not like a big secret, but, August 26th, 27th, 28th, I'm planning to go on for Fanny. And on August 26th, to sort of coincide with that weekend, my album is dropping.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. My husband, his name is Jason Yeager. He's a jazz pianist and he's amazing. And I like him a lot. he and I, like, in basically quarantine, we were each other's sole collaborators for a long time. And we ended up developing some arrangements for just us. And so then we decided to record them. And that is being dropped August 26th. And then we're doing a CD release concert at Birdland on the Monday, the August 29th. So that's like going to be a big weekend of like the album coming out. And in fact, so what's crazy is like when we heard the song People, when I was auditioning, and I didn't know I had a callback because it took a while for that callback to come back. We learned the song. We were in the middle of recording. And so we were like, we love this song. So we came up with our own arrangement of it. We recorded it and finished the album. And, you know, and then it turned out that I booked the part. So our version of People, which is different than the, it's in a different key. It's just us, you know, there aren't violins or anything, but like People is on it. And a host of other, some Broadway songs, a couple originals, some sort of classic rock, like, but, and we do like, ooh, it's duo, it's piano voice, but because it's recorded and not live, we were able to do like overdubbing stuff. So he also plays some percussion. And I play the flute and the clarinet, and like, there's like all this other stuff we added in because we were like, look what we can do when it's just the two of us playing around in a studio.
Yeah. So. I think it was on your website that your lifelong dream was to learn clarinet. So I'm glad to know that you did it.
It was. Yeah. That was my pandemic project. It's right there. It's standing on a, like, I keep it out to like make myself practice. I haven't, you know, since Funny Girl, I don't have a whole lot of time.
Oh my God. I'm so excited. What's the album called?
It's called Hand in Hand, which is from a lyric from one of the songs we cover, which is a traditional jazz song called Louisiana Fairy Tale. It says, there's this lyric that's like, hand in hand, we stroll along the trail. And the world is at our feet. The picture is complete, like a Louisiana fairy tale.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So hand in hand, since like, we also like, you know, it's like cute because we're like married and we like hold hands.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And so you obviously also have your first jazz album, which is all jazz, but this is a little bit more of a variety.
Yeah.
And you did Love for Sale before Gaga and Tony Bennett. So.
I love it.
That's so exciting.
Dylan, did you do a dose of drama? I can't remember.
I don't know if I did, but I will say, anyone who has not watched the second season of Hacks yet on HBO, it is hysterical, and Jean Smart is amazing. Everything everyone already says, but it is
amazing,
a must. Yeah, and Harriet Harris is in an episode, and every time I think like, oh, that's like that episode of the season that I love, then another one comes out, and I'm like, oh, that's the one that I love more. So it's really a great second season. Mm-hmm.
Yay.
Well, Julie, this has been so fun. And thank you for hanging out with us for this hour. Yeah, I am excited for your summer ahead. Seriously, you've got some great stuff on our birthday weekend, I will say. So maybe we'll be around.
Oh, happy birthday. So I guess that makes you what? That makes you a... No, it's not. No, I'm trying to think of what your sign is. You're not...
Oh, yeah, we're Virgos.
We're August 30th. Yeah. So yeah, Virgos. Yeah.
Virgos.
Yeah.
What is
What's your birthday?
March 24th. Aries.
You're Aries?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Virgos and Aries get along well.
Now, Julie, the people can find you at Juju Julie.
Yes.
Julie B? Yeah. Julie B?
J-U-J-U. It's like the Juju B candy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Juju Julie B. And I'm on the gram and the Twitter and and I just started TikToking. That's my
amazing.
Yeah, it's like my new addiction.
Yeah, that'll be perfect with the album too. You can put little
find some fun stuff to put up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, I have to say, I love that you're allowed to share photos of yourself as Fanny.
I mean, am I?
Listen, if no one stopped you yet, don't worry about it.
I feel like the curtain calls, it's like they let people take photos at the curtain call, so that's sort of fair game. And the other ones were just like my put in rehearsal where like everyone else is in like jeans and t-shirts.
You found your loophole. Your loophole
is
there.
But yeah.
Thank you so much. This was such a lovely chat. And I can't wait to see you shine. I can't wait for your album. Like, only good things to come. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. So nice to talk to you.
Yeah. And of course, everyone should follow us at the Drama Podcast. Connor at Connor McDowell. Me at Dylan McDowell. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.